Blog Talk Radio.
And this is the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and Gwen Berry. The Engineer of Knowledge is with us today. Thank you for being here, Wayne. And, and I'll open us up with a little bit of David Bowie because he sets the tone for the week. Thank you to David Bowie for setting the tone.
Yeah,
hello, Jack.
Hello, everybody out there in Listenerville. I hope everybody's doing well today.
And hello, Wayne. How are you today? This is the Engineer of Knowledge who joins us occasionally. Thank you for being with us.
Yes.
Well, thank you for the invitation. It's always my pleasure.
Yes, and great.
Guys, I've got this wonderful quote to share with you by Richard Ravnikoff. And it was something that David posted up in one of the Facebook rooms that we have. And it really comes to bear. And it says, and I quote, "To Americans under the age of 30, you may not fully realize the astounding irony of this press release about Edward Snowden, issued by the government of Hong Kong. When I was growing up, people ran from the Soviet Union, fled from Russia, tried desperately, often risked death to get to America, get to where they would finally be safe. No longer. In our world today, people run from America, take midnight flights over the pole to get to Russia, a way station on their journey to freedom. Those who expose high crimes are not safe in the United States, where the federal government wants to lock them up on phony charges of espionage. That anyone would use Russia as a way station is irony on a grand scale." I thought that that was an incredible nail on the head, gentlemen.
Yes.
I really did.
Well, the whole espionage charges are, you know, where's the proof here? I have not seen any proof that he's been guilty of espionage in any degree. This is completely preposterous in my book, and I'll remain that steadfast against the decision to call it that until I see some firm proof that he was involved in espionage.
You know, Jack, I got it. Did you see Meet the Press today?
No, I missed it.
I've got to play this for you. It's about 2 minutes of David Gregory and Glenn Greenwald. You got to hear this, guys.
Great.
Final question for you, but I'd like you to hang around. I just want to get Pete Williams in here as well. To the extent that you have aided and abetted Snowden, even in his current movements, why shouldn't you, Mr. Greenwald, be charged with a crime?
I think it's pretty extraordinary that anybody who would call themselves a journalist would publicly muse about whether or not other journalists should be charged with felonies. The assumption in your question, David, is completely without evidence, the idea that I've aided and abetted him in any way. The scandal that arose in Washington before our stories began was about the fact that the Obama administration is trying to criminalize investigative journalism by going through the emails and phone records of AP reporters, accusing a Fox News journalist of the theory that you just embraced, being a co-conspirator with felonies for working with sources. If you want to embrace that theory, it means that every investigative journalist in the United States who works with their sources, who receives classified information, is a criminal. And it's precisely those theories and precisely that climate that has become so menacing in the United States. It's why the New Yorker's Jane Mayer said investigative reporting has come to a standstill, her word, as a result of the theories that you just referenced.
Well, the question of who's a journalist may be up to a debate with regard to what you're doing. And of course, anybody who's watching this understands I was asking a question. That question has been raised by lawmakers as well. I'm not embracing anything, but obviously I take your point.
Sort of a corporate bootlicker there. I don't really
anybody
on the back end of that, but these guys, oh snap. Glenn Greenwald has been, he left Salon.com because they would not put, you know, what he was saying out. They kept fishing through his words, and he went over to, I guess it's The Guardian he's with now, over in Britain, and he does a fabulous job. He's brought information throughout since George Bush. He's been publishing the good stuff right along, and he hasn't sold out, not once. Now he's standing up beside what he sees as the truth, that he's embracing his journalism ethic and calling the cronies, the corporate cronies, for what they are, which is what he just did with Gregory.
Right. Good point. Yeah, Glenn Greenwald has been an amazing man, completely incorruptible in my book, and he's done a magnificent job of exposing many, many falsehoods over the years. He's been a tremendous asset to free press and to intelligent journalism in my book, and I'm sure in the opinions of many others as well. Have you followed him much, Wayne?
No, not really. I'm kind of I'm at a little disadvantage on this one.
No problem. That's okay. He's a good guy. He's worth Googling and finding out about, because he's quite a tremendous guy, and he has a long, long record of truth telling. And I applaud what he's done here, both in shutting down that crazy Gregory fellow, and also in his revealing of or helping Edward Snowden reveal what he revealed.
Okay, I'm following now. Right. So.
Yeah.
Kind of puts me in the mind of Richard Nixon and Jack Anderson days.
Oh yeah.
Jesus.
Yeah. Nixon wanted to have him assassinated.
That's right.
Yep. Very true.
Well, Greenwald is hammering away, but he's not the only one. Look at Kevin Znees and Chris Hedges, and of course, Democracy Now is
Amy
giving
Goodman.
A spotlight to, Goodman is putting him on when she can. There are plenty of really good resources. They simply don't get a large enough voice for the greater, population. If you want to be informed these days, you have to spend the time, you have to dig around. And people they don't have the time to do it, is all I can think. And it's not a blameful situation, because, frankly, folks are still, no matter, what's being said, folks are still scrambling to make the end of the month bills. And
People are exhausted. They're working too much in this country. Good God, it's changed from a land of opportunity to a land of being exploited badly, everybody. It's just terrible.
Well, and if you've taken a good look this week at what's going on across the globe, especially in the Western world, we've got massive protesting going on. It's endless. It's like watching a chessboard, a global chessboard, where who's moving what piece into protest this week. I mean, it went Turkey to Brazil. It's happening in Argentina. You don't get a huge amount of mainstream media coverage. What do you think, Wayne?
Well, I think, yes, it's been proven in the standard of living. Well, Ralph Nader did a very good piece where basically the middle class in today's dollar compared to, say, in the late 60s, has de-escalated by about two-thirds. In other words, we're only making about one-third of what the middle class used to make in relationship back in the late 60s, early 70s.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You also have the big protests and riots in Brazil saying, what are we doing spending this kind of money when there's so much else being needed here?
Mm-hmm.
I would also compliment on what Jack said, was today, yes, we're working harder and everything and trying to find the time, but today we have so much more disinformation, misleading information that has to be weeded through that we've never seen before, too.
Good point. And it's just lies and distortion and it's obfuscation at the highest degree, and it's disgusting and it's all over the place. And that's why it's good for as many people as possible to tune into this show, because Gwen has a very good knack for ferreting out the truth in any given topic, and she's at it constantly. So you can trust Gwen.
I don't actually do this alone. If you remember, you're over there.
That's right.
and really, we're just putting a voice out there.
Right.
I was going to say, I know all three of us do a lot of our homework when we go posting our blogs of weeding and ferreting this out.
That's right.
It's really important. The indie alternative media is where people can turn to find some credible resource of information about what actually is happening. And unfortunately, I heard it said here that something about conspiracy I read today from a friend who was saying, you know, you used to be that you would call this conspiracy. We were talking about the journalist who wrote the piece for Rolling Stone who was killed last week. Hang on, and I'll find him. And basically, when you heard about the way he died, it was a brutal and cruel death, a car crash. Mm-hmm. And basically, the first thing that I thought of when I saw that post was that that you sure it was a car wreck. Michael Hastings, you know, he exposed the American military, and he made some hasty, fear-based emails before he left, and then all of a sudden he's dead in a car crash. Well, it doesn't take too much right now to understand that this government is capable of anything. It always has been, but we've always thought, oh, well, that was that administration and that.
Well, you know, increasingly it's come to take on certain auspices of what we thought was gone now, the old KGB, Soviet-style method of dealing with dissenters and protesters. You know, it's really gotten scary in a similar way, and I don't like the trend.
Well, it basically what's going on here is that it's standard operating procedure for this government, no matter who's sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
No matter who gets in there, there's a few that get
right.
in there and go in with integrity and a good head for it. But if they're getting ready to go against the curve, they're going to get lost in the shuffle. Our leadership, and this is not just America, it's not just the United States. Look what's going on down there, as you know, Wayne or Jack said, in Brazil, and look how that president, a woman, is handling the situation. It's really not too above board, is it? They had Netroots. You know, Netroots used to be a place where you could go and find our kind of folk, people who were, you know, banging the cage and saying, hey, things have got to change. We've got to straighten out the government. Where the progressive people were, the Netroots Nation. They had a lot to do with putting the new viable candidate up on the podium or up on the platform, Mr. Obama. And they did that with as far as I could see, it was happening because I was part of Netroots because they saw an integrity there. But they were wrong, and many of the Netroots folks know that these days.
I was going to say, one of my favorite quotes is by John Steinbeck, where he basically took the absolute power corrupts absolutely, and he said, well, really, power really doesn't corrupt. Fear corrupts, and it's the fear of losing that absolute power.
Yeah, good point.
That was John Steinbeck's view of it.
Very good.
Back in his day, you know, the union leaders trying to, you know, get a decent wage and rights and vacation time for the working middle class, which that's what they worked on. Of course, there were plants in there, and there were plants in the any of the anti-war movements, the Black Panther movements in the late 60s, early 70s. You know, there was always that plant in there. And, of course, today is no different at all.
Right. Well, the establishment is reasserting its control today in very sneaky ways. And they're not above board, and they're not entirely free from blame for disinformation and everything else.
Alan.
Yeah. Well, it's been going on for decades and millenniums even.
And I would ask you guys, name me a politician. Name me a Democrat, a progressive, who is in the government now, in local, or, and I'm sure there are some local, but more evenly for the Beacon on the national level, that are doing anything right now constructive for the people, for labor unions, for addressing the poison of the Gulf, for addressing the Keystone pipeline, for addressing the atrocity of homelessness and starvation with children in this country.
The only name that comes to mind for me would be Bernie Sanders. He's about the only one, and he's not a Democrat. He's a self-described socialist who is caucusing with the Democrats because they're the party in power.
Well,
in the Senate.
You got me, Jack. You got one there. I mean, I was talking about Netroots, you know, before, and they had their convention this week, and Nancy Pelosi was their high speaker, and I'm drawing a blank. Keynote speaker.
Keynote speaker. Yeah.
Yeah, and she came to the podium, and people were booing her. And for good reason. There were several reasons for the rabble-rousers to be booing her. Mm-hmm. And mostly it was her position on NSA and Snowden that was kicking up. And they took the people who were, rabble-rousing and saying that's no good to her answers and stuff out of the room. And once they did that, they cleared like 10 or 12 folks out of the room. The rest of the crowd settled back, listened to her, and then finally applauded her. I call that the largest sellout I've seen in a long time.
Well, it's terrible that it happened that way. And I have mixed emotions about Nancy Pelosi. I saw her as one of the most incredibly effective speakers of the House. Of course, when you compare her to John Boehner's performance, it's easy for anybody to look that good. But, realistically speaking, she did deliver the goods during her term as Speaker of the House for the most part. Now, yes, she's a mainstream Democrat with liberal leanings, but which means on occasion you're going to have her sell out. But by and large, her record has been pretty good. Overall, for delivering for the needs of the workers and the people.
What, really?
I would say about Nancy Pelosi. Of course, her father was mayor of Baltimore, and she's a Baltimore, Maryland girl. As I grew up in the suburbs of Baltimore, so I have kind of a fondness for on that aspect. But for the Democrats right now, basically the mindset is they can be reactive instead of active.
Mm-hmm.
It's too big of a target to go active, but they can be reactive.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't remember her being there when everything was happening in Minnesota or Wisconsin. I don't remember her.
No, that's true.
Obama standing up.
Of course, she was in the minority then, but.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing her there. I don't remember her being a stand-up for the only thing I've seen Obama and Pelosi, because they're a set pair as far as governance goes. The only thing I saw them stand up for was keeping General Motors going.
Oh, the bailout.
Well, I think was an incredibly good call.
I think you're selling both of them short, Gwen, and I'll tell you why. I understand fully your reasoning behind being very upset with Obama, and I share that. But, let's look at a few things here. Let's look at both of them have championed gay rights and the anti-discriminatory efforts and stuff. And, for regardless of when they came into the battle or what they did, they both haven't opposed it, let's put it that way. And they haven't stood in the way of it. They haven't been engaged in obstruction the way the Tea Party and the Republican Party has been. On the immigration issue, there's, different things going on there, too. But by and large, I mean, if you want to be ideologically pure, you're going to find very little people to applaud. Politics is by its very nature a game of compromise.
Yeah, well, there's compromise and then there's a total corruption.
Right, I agree. Yeah.
I think that this country is in serious crisis right now as far as leadership goes.
Hey, you got a weak president who says he's doing one thing, but he's actually doing the other.
He's a liar. And even the countries he's visiting right now, people are standing up in Parliament over in Ireland saying, this man is a hypocrite, and you're applauding him? He's a warmonger who has killed hundreds of children with drones, and he has. He had a personal kill list. I mean, these are lies. These are truths. And anybody who sits in the Oval Office with a personal kill list for drones is not somebody I would call a good leader.
I think the biggest mistake he has made has been in continuing and actually accelerating the Bush anti-terrorism program. He's done it in such a way that was in some ways cleaner, in some ways dirtier, but in all ways not the best possible way. And it's been very detrimental to him politically, to the nation as it stands in the world. And the only advantage it's done is that it has, in fact, wiped out a lot of Al-Qaeda's ability to just mount a massive strike against the U.S.
I doubt that seriously, but then again, I don't have those, you know, I don't think anybody knows what they're capable of doing anymore. I think that it would be, so look what happened in Boston. And people think that our government's responsible for that, too. It's what it's called, a false flag. I'm not so sure at all, but I do know that it tends to be a thing when people start thinking, people who think, your friends and mine, you know, the folks who sit down and take a look at things objectively. And it is an objective point of view. It's an objective point of view for me to point out to you, let me take you on a ride over to Wall Street right now. Tell me what you think about how Obama's handled that.
Oh, we've already been through that, and you know how I feel about that. It's been a disaster. Been too friendly.
You know, there's very little the fellow has done that I find commendable anymore. And it's really a point. Well, let's ask Wayne. I mean, here we've got a guest who blogs and puts the words out there. And Wayne, what do you think about the state of leadership in our country right now? It's a broad question, but I think it's a good one.
Well, it is a broad question, and I'll say that where no one is perfect, there were some things that I would like to have seen repealed, like the Patriot Act. And of course, that's basically what Snowden is exposing, the continuation of the Bush and Cheney Patriot Act, which there was nothing patriotic about it.
Right.
But on the other hand, given the alternative, I'm going to go with Obama. You know, he's not perfect, but compared to what others you could put up to replace him, I'm not seeing anybody right now any better or what we had to choose from at the time.
Well, we're buying into a two-party lie that's put over us by people who want to control what we're thinking, what we're doing, and our laws so that it complies with whatever profits the most.
Right. This is where you have the two-party system, but you have to work, just like I do with the Republican Party, you have to work from within to make the change.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take the Ralph Nader and the Green Party. Ralph Nader, like I said, brought up some very good points here recently with his latest book, and the name escapes me. Oh, I think it's like I Told You So or something like that, or I Warned You, something along that lines. But you saw what would happen in Florida. He split the vote away from the Democrats, and Bush, who really didn't get elected, right, because they purged the voting rolls, too, on top of that.
Oh, yeah.
But you had 8 years of Bush and Cheney.
Mm-hmm.
So Ralph Nader, I think, would have been more complimentary and been more beneficial had he worked within the Democrat Party mm-hmm. and tried to get his views there instead of going off separately. Again, mm-hmm. yes, the two-party system does have its pitfalls, but like I said, my only answer to that is well, it's just like, if I may bring up here, in Arizona, the moderate Republicans did an in-run around the reactionary ultra-conservative Republicans,
mm-hmm.
worked with the Democrats to approve and pass legislation. Of course, the reactionary Republicans are saying, well, we're going to go after those moderate Republicans and they're going to be purged. It's like, no, mm-hmm. the target's on you, not on the moderates. So, and it's just like Karl Rove, Michelle Bachmann attacking Karl Rove, because Karl Rove has realized that the Republican Party has to purge this extreme aspect from the party.
Yeah, they're detrimental.
Bachmann,
they're destroying the party.
And Karl Rove is like grinning like, yes, please attack me because you are the problem in the Republican
mm-hmm.
Party.
Right.
Well, I'm sure you can find some inverse and same application within the Democratic Party.
Sure, sure. I think you're probably right. You know, I that's in one of the rare cases I will ever agree with Karl Rove on anything.
The
Tea Party is a very bad effect on the Republican Party.
Well, basically, it's like, go ahead, Doug. Sorry, Glenn, go ahead.
Well, gentlemen, you seem to be under your, you speak as though, let me put it this way. I listen to you, and I think that you don't see what I'm seeing. From my perspective, the head of the Democrat Party, the chair right now, is somebody I've worked with before, and she's become a complete corporate lackey. She has no interest in anything else but putting up whatever the corporate, you know, whatever the corporate goodness is. And I'm talking about Wasserman Schultz.
Oh, yeah.
And the only different Democrat from a Republican in this state right now that I know of are some locals. There's one senator we have right now down here, and she's pretty good. She's pretty knowledgeable, pretty fair, wants, you know, is an honest person and not bought. But anybody on the national level, and down here it's very easy to get bought on the local level. But, you know, there was a woman running for the congressional seat here who was the mayor of Palm Beach, West Palm Beach, and Lois Frankel. And I asked her questions, point blank questions.
Mm-hmm.
And she actually sat in a room full of people and told me that my questions were too difficult for even me to understand the answers to.
Good Lord.
Really pissed me off. But I kept my
composure.
And I said, but ma'am, you're standing there telling me, a constituent, that that my question is, you know, is irrelevant to the situation, but I'm talking about the leadership issues that I am voting for a candidate who will, you know, put those issues to either new laws or to carry out whatever kind of political dynamic that they're going to, you know. And,
or at least discussion.
I asked her several questions, and then I asked her about Israel. Bad move there. But thank you, David. David's in the chat, and he said it's 11th dimensional chess is complicated, right? Well, it is. You know, politics and voting, it ain't for babies.
Ain't for babies. And it's ever in flux, too. That's the thing that makes it so fascinating and so frustrating.
I'm sorry I wandered so much, but my point to both of you gentlemen who make such good points and are such good bridge builders, I would say to you that you can't convince me that our leadership in this country and globally is not in crisis, and they're in crisis because they're bought and paid for. The corruption is so deep and
yeah, I would agree.
That, you know, when you tell me you got to be a part of that, I think we got to stand back and say, it ain't working there, you know?
Yeah, well, I think it's very obvious to almost everybody. I'm going to say something about the Democratic Party first, and then I'd like Engineer to speak about the Republican Party, because, after all, he was a lifelong Republican who was basically shoved out of his party by the radical far-right Tea Party element. I'll talk first about the Democratic Party. They've been a major disappointment because they've changed so much over the years. From a party that was friendly to labor, to working people, to the poor, to minorities. And they've kept some of those attributes, but they've abandoned a lot of them just to be able to get elected. You've seen the emergence of the blue dog Democrats, the soft, namby-pamby, wimpy Democrat in name only types that flooded the Congress for a while there and ended up being defeated. In their defeat, a lot of Tea Party members swept in. But, you know, that's not what the Democratic Party was founded on. I'm talking about New Deal principles. I'm talking about progressive ideals that date back even to Teddy Roosevelt and Woodrow Wilson. And, you know, we just don't have hardly any of that left anymore. We have a few lonely voices out there on the Democratic side that are pushing for things, like Bernie Sanders is a good one. He's not even in the party, but he's pushing the Democratic Party in the way that it should be pushed and for things that need to be pushed. And it's time for the other Democrats to get – they've been pushed so far to the right by the Reagan era onward that it's time for them to reemerge and go leftward again, and I will applaud the day that happens. I'll cede the conversation to Engineer at this point.
Well, thank you, Jack. And, yes, you brought up very good points. Yes, I have a family legacy of being within the Republican Party since the Civil War. You brought up Teddy Roosevelt, who was, of course, a Republican who went against the corporate greed and the influence of the time.
Tammany Hall.
We had a very good congressman, a Republican, a moderate Republican from the 1st District of Maryland named Wayne Gilchrist. I knew him very well. We called each other Wayne. But basically, he was a multi-term congressman, did a very good job, really represented the area. I worked on many projects with him. But then the Tea Party raised its ugly head, and they put up somebody, his name is Andy Harris. He is now the congressman. We haven't seen him at all on the shore. He is nothing more than a bought and paid for Republican shill, which is a guaranteed vote in Congress. Wayne Gilchrist broke with the party and voted to bring the troops home from Iraq. Still, you know, in the, I'm trying to think of the time frame, we've been around the 2008 time frame, and that's what was his downfall. He angered the Tea Party Republicans, and they came out in droves to vote against him because he broke ranks and voted for the Democrats. The man was a Vietnam Marine combat veteran who said, this is not where our sons of America need to be. Let's bring them home now. And that cost him his job.
That's a tragedy.
But he's still a very, very grand man and a very high ethical man. He refused to take any PAC money the whole time he was there. So, you know, when you said, can you think of a good, you know, candidate who is not a bought and paid for shill for corporations, Congressman Wayne Gilchrist was the best of the best.
Great. And we need him to run again, don't we?
I would love for him to. I would love for him to. But, you know, his days are done. He's kind of happy, you know, being retired and quiet. He does speak out against a lot of the Republican Tea Party aspects. And, of course, he just gets accused. Well, he was just really a Democrat anyway. He's not a real Republican. That's why he got voted out. You know, that rhetoric.
Right. Yeah,
exactly. And voted what was correct.
Well, that's what happens when you get too ideologically pure bent, because what you do is you force a party in one direction or the other, and it's invariably bad as a whole for that party. And it's slowly but surely marginalizing the Republicans. They are no longer a viable national party. They have little pockets of strength here, there, and everywhere, and they're louder than they've ever been, but they're really not as effectual as they could be. Were the Tea Party not around. They refuse to compromise. Everything's got to be their way or the highway. And you know what? That's not America, folks. That is not the way it's supposed to be. And they're destroying the Congress in the process.
Well, Jack, you know that I've always said extremism in any direction really has no longevity.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, it will crush and crumble under its own extremism weight.
Right, and let's hope there's not too much damage done before that happens.
Well, that's the other thing. That's right. You know, it all depends on how long they can stay and hold out. Like we've seen up in Wisconsin, the busting of the unions, that whole travesty going up in the Wisconsin area up there.
Right.
And even talking about running that governor for president off of the Republican ticket. And I'm thinking, oh, please do, you know. I can think of no better way to lose another presidential election.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, you know, gentlemen, though, extreme actions make great changes, and it takes a lot of courage to be the hammer that comes down, too.
Oh, sure.
Our history is full of that.
There's a difference between activism and extremism in office. You know, when there's activists out there, they're dedicated to a cause, and it's usually a just cause, and they're usually pushing very hard for its implementation. And that's a good thing, and we need more of that. We need more people to wake up and see the world and do something rather than sit back and complain.
Let me interject one thing here. My daughter just got her certificate of a master's degree from Johns Hopkins in basically neuroeducation. I'm very proud of her, and my kudos out to her. She's listening. But when she was going to college in Washington College, she had a little sign on her wall that said, and it was a quote from, another great lady from history. It said, "Well-behaved women rarely make history."
That
kind of complements what we were just saying there.
Very true.
That sounds very much like one of my heroes, Bella Abzug.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
My mother was a Republican who was even a party chair in her county down here. She was also someone who took me at 15 to a luncheon to listen to Gloria Steinem speak. She was very much for women's equality, and she was a part of Vogue Normal. She campaigned and worked with the women's parties in bringing whatever she could to the vote in the local precincts. And that's something that we keep forgetting is so important, that people get involved locally, because that's the greatest power is. I like here what, speaking of corruption and everything that's going on with the whistleblowing right now, David, I thought so, but I wanted to bring Bella Abzug up. It was Eleanor Roosevelt who said that. Also, there's a quote that is attributed to Mr. Snowden that, David has shared with us. I quote, "I believe that at this point in history, the greatest danger to our freedom and way of life comes from the reasonable fear of omniscient state powers kept in check by nothing more than policy documents." And if you take a good look at Jack, I learned that reading some of your stuff, what you posted about Alec. It's really quite true. What Mr. Snowden is doing, I think, is the right thing.
I applaud him. I don't look at him as a traitor. I don't look at him as an espionage agent. I applaud him as a courageous individual acting for the benefit of all.
Yeah, he's a whistleblower. And there's everything right with that title, whistleblowing. It says,
right.
"Hey, whoa, wait, stop, something's wrong here. We gotta
mm-hmm.
get this in check." And mm-hmm. not enough people have ever been willing to do it, but the ones
right.
who do are always considered the extreme.
And you know, the sad thing is, most of the time they are victimized and they are punished and they are imprisoned or they're. But you know, they're the pioneers of a movement. And the pioneers always get struck down, but what happens afterward is what really matters, is because people come aware and they take a different stance and a different way of looking at things, and from there progress is made.
Agreed. Well stated, Jack.
Yeah.
You know, guys, I wondered what I wanted to bring one other topic up here. I wondered what you all thought about, I don't know if you've been watching it, but down here in Florida, as ever, we have the hot mess going up there in Sanford. And they've chosen an all-woman jury for the Zimmerman case. You know,
yeah.
He who shot and killed Trayvon uh-huh. Martin. It's basically all-woman jury plus the...
woman judge.
Yeah, and the woman judge on Friday put the kibosh on the screaming phone recording, which was actually Trayvon screaming before the shot was heard.
Right,
but
right.
But she put the... And so now a lot of folks, and I have a pretty eclectic group of friends on a few thousand of them there on Facebook, and I'm reading that folks are thinking that it's a packed court and that Zimmerman's going to get off. And I was wondering what you all thought about that.
Well, I'm not close
but
enough to the case to really make an intelligent summation at this point. I prefer to wait and see what happens. I was surprised that it was an all-woman jury, and I was surprised that the judge disallowed the screaming taped testimony, you know?
As a Floridian, I can tell you that's Grand Dragon territory up there. I went to school not far from there in the middle of the orange groves at a boarding school, and they used to stop our buses. Going to the groves to away games and stuff with their hoods on and everything, passing out literature, and that's a while back, but still, that is Ku Klux Klan territory up there, you know?
Right. And I don't know where the jurors came from. I don't know enough about them. Do you know anything about it, Wayne?
Not really, other than what you've stated. The only thing that comes prevalent to my mind was when he called 911 and was talking with the dispatcher, and he said that he was following this young man, this other man, and she said, "Don't do that."
Right, exactly.
So she knew that he would be perceived as being a threat, intimidating to the mm-hmm. other person just walking down the street.
Yeah, but he did follow, and he went further.
Right, right. He went not only that, but I'm pretty sure that he challenged him, and being a... You know, at one time, a late teen young man myself, someone comes challenging me on the street. Well, I'm going to, you know, it's the young bull syndrome comes out. You're going to challenge it. And I'm pretty sure that the Trayvon was probably strong and quicker and had the best of Zimmerman when Zimmer pulled out the gun and fired. But I think it was... the scenario was brought on by himself from his own actions. If he had just stayed back and let the young lad go on home, you know, to his family, instead of being a wannabe cop, this would have never happened.
Well, so many times justice is not served, and I sincerely hope in this case we will see an exception to that statement, because, so many times the good guy gets penalized and the bad guy gets to go free. And I'd hate to see that happen, since it involved the life of a teenage boy who was senselessly and needlessly murdered. I think it's ridiculous.
Well, I can also give you the example of the woman who she was caught in many lies about her young daughter there in Florida. They finally found her like a plastic bag or something. Well, she got off. And then in Arizona, the woman who shot, cut her boyfriend's throat because basically she was a jilted lover.
Mm-hmm.
And she's getting off. Well, you know, not going down for the death penalty.
Oh, she's getting life?
I think that's what they're saying, yes.
If Cody Arias?
I think that they're ruling that she will not be sentenced to death. And I might I might be wrong on it, but I think that's what I've the latest I've heard on that.
Yeah.
And it's like, I don't know. Of course, I wasn't on the jury. I didn't hear all of what was presented. But
right.
what was presented, I was coming up with a whole different conclusion.
Sure.
And I have been a foreman of the jury on one occasion and sat on juries on others.
Mm-hmm.
I myself would not have come to that conclusion.
And you know, we're getting some blowback in the chat room, and I want to be fair and give some air to the blowback, if you will. One of our listeners is a great name. What grinds my gears? I like that. He's like, oh, my God, Trayvon Martin was no innocent. And you know what? It's true. He was your typical teenage kid. And
sure,
no teenage kid is innocent.
That age, right? He had been thrown out of school, but that does not warrant a death
sentence. It does not justify a murder. Right?
Yeah, it doesn't justify what actions were taken against him. And Zimmerman had no idea who he was except a black kid with a hood on.
That's all that mattered to him.
Yeah, and my nephew is, well, he's 22 now, but at the time he was a teenager, and he's a college student. He's a football player at college. He works hard. He's a good kid, and a lot of his friends are also college football players, and his old high school chums here, they all played in football. And a lot of them are African-American, and they all show up at my door wearing hoodies. You know, that's just
that's
kids
the way
wear.
Dress.
I used to wear freaking bell bottoms, dude, you know?
Well, it's kind of in that age category, you do certain things that your friends do, and that it's just peer pressure. And you know what? It's universal.
Yeah,
always has been that way. Christ, we had dude suits on in the 40s, you know, and that didn't last long, but people wore them.
The 50s.
Well, you
what's
know,
the jackets of the 50s. It was the
very
uniform.
True, yeah.
The greasers. You know, listen, and motorcycle guys can still be scary. But I got to address what Mr. Gears is saying here. So the killing of Martin, Trayvon Martin, was racially motivated. I'm going to say, yeah, it was.
I would agree.
And more than that, it was motivated by, you know, an overload of testosterone on Zimmerman's side.
Yeah.
And you know what? We need more goddess here, okay? Guys, just saying, it's my day. We need more goddess energy, more peace, more love, more healing. And David says, I don't think any of us have enough information to make an intelligent jury decision without being
very
honest.
True.
I certainly
very
would
true.
Rely on what is put out by the MSM as the source. And he's right. He is right. None of us really, you know, and you know what? And Mr. Gears is also saying that everyone's already condemned Zimmerman. You know, I have to plead some guilt on that because I have actually made a judgment, and without hearing all the facts, you know, in the courtroom, I suppose that's a very, you know, strong yes. I got up to
you
it.
You know, circumstantial evidence lends one to believe in that direction, but we need the full trial to come out and all the evidence to be presented before we can, like David says, intelligently make up our minds.
And that's the truth. We're coming down to the bottom of the top of the hour again, gentlemen, and there's one thing I'd like to get your impressions about and share with the audience this week. And that is that, you know, there's a great man that's crossing right now. I never thought I would ever see him free. Nelson Mandela. I never thought I'd see him free. And yet he not only got free, but he became president. And you know, he's in critical condition, and I wish him a very painless crossing. I really do.
Right.
And I want to celebrate his life because
he
gave us so much humanity. He gave us so much.
He sure did. And patience and forbearance. He was a wonderful man, no doubt about it. And when he came to office, he was not vindictive. That's the biggest thing you can say. He's a wonderful man.
Well,
if I may, I was working for a company home-based out of South Africa called Circuit Breaker Industries. And they sent over the head of human resources, who was a black Afrikaan. And I got the pleasure to tell him how much I admired Nelson Mandela. And he did as much for that country as Martin Luther King did for the race relations in this country. The nonviolent aspects. And Nelson Mandela served many years in prison just for simply voicing the opinion of, I just want to be treated like a man.
Right.
And when he got the power of the presidency and stuff, as Jack said, there wasn't any vindictiveness. He said, okay, this is the time of healing. Let's move forward. And that was the brilliance and the philanthropic aspect of that man and the contribution he made not only to South Africa but to the world.
He serves as a great example to humanity.
Exactly.
Yep.
And being very honest, and I told this this man who was born and raised in South Africa, I said, if I had served and been treated like him, I don't know if I could have personally been that forgiving. You know, so then realizing I know my, you know, realizing my own shortcomings is what made me appreciate and voice my opinion on how well he handled that situation.
Yeah, well put, Engineer. Great job.
Wayne, I want to thank you for joining us this week. I hope you'll come back.
It's been a pleasure.
Well, I was going to say, invite me anytime. I really, really enjoy this. I know that... you know,
you'll be co-hosting next week, Wayne.
Oh, that's right. I'll be co-hosting. So
yeah. I won't be with you next week, folks. This is Jack speaking. I will be at an affair my brother will be having, and he's, you know, ill with cancer, and this is probably going to be his last summer. So I will be at that and won't be able to be a part of the program next week. But be sure to tune in to listen to Gwen and Wayne, two very intelligent people who stay attuned to what's happening in the world and have progressive bents, both of them. So that's great.
Thank you again, Jack and Gwen. It was truly my pleasure, and I look forward to next week.
Yes, thanks to both of you.
And Wayne, I have a question for you coming from the chat room. What kind of engineer are you?
Well, I my degree is actually in applied science. And I'm working in my sixth decade. I work in both mechanical and the electrical engineering disciplines, and currently right now I'm designing substations for a very large company who owns a lot of transmission lines and needing a lot of upgrades. So
it's more
along the electrical, but also the complementing of the mechanical engineering, too. I do have the honorable mention on the patent on the soap in a lot of the airplanes and the lavatories. I am the one that designed that. So that and $5 will get me a cup of coffee at any Starbucks, and that includes the premium soap.
Thank you. Thank you, Wayne. Appreciate it. I'll have to ask Jack a little bit more, you know, when we have time. We are down to 30 seconds. I want to thank everybody for listening. This has been the Sunday Show with Jack Jodell and Gwen Berry. Remember to go check out Saturday Afternoon Post blog online. And this program is sponsored by Roundtree7, the number 7.com. and the Commons Project Network. Please check us out online, and we thank you for listening. And guys, well, I'll be with you next weekend, Wayne and Jack. I will talk to you soon. And
talk to you in 2 weeks. Bye bye, everybody. Stay focused, everybody. Stay
absolutely
pushing forward.
Keep the faith.
There you
that's
go.
Right.
This good is night for the Sunday show. Thank you for listening.
Bye bye now.
Bye bye.